Okay, in this lesson, we're going to discuss land trusts and other legal considerations. Every time you sign sign your name on a note, you're risking everything you own to fulfill that debt. In most states, creditors can sue you for default on a mortgage note and come after you personally without ever bothering with the house. That's their right. They can look to all your other assets to justify your debt in place of or in addition to the property you mortgage. A lot of people don't know that. Some people are under the impression that when you sign on a mortgage, the only thing they can take is the property, but that is not true. They can come after the property, or they can come after your other assets, or they can come after just your assets and leave the property alone, or any combination of the above. But don't worry, I have a solution to that problem for some types of financing. And that solution also solves several other problems associated with owning real estate. It's simple, but it's very important. In fact, I would call it extremely important to all of us who buy houses. Anyone can use it, and it really doesn't cost a nickel more to do it right than it does to do it wrong. And, of course, that solution is a land trust. A land trust is the entity we use to take title to property all over the United States. And so we're going to have a discussion on it in this session. And when I'm through, I'll cover a few questions that are not getting covered in this session. And I hope that I cover them all for you. I'm not going to make you a land trust expert on this call, that's for sure. The good news is you don't have to be a land trust expert to be able to use them, because they're really all not that complicated at all. But I will tell you that a lot of people resist using them because they just don't understand them, or they get bad advice on them. And that's sad, because it's such a simple, simple, simple entity to use, and it doesn't complicate your life in any way, shape, or form. In fact, it's just as easy to do it right as it is to do it wrong. So let's talk about doing it right here during this session. So what's the definition of a land trust? Well, frankly, the definition of a land trust is irrelevant to us investors. How they came about, in fact, they date back to the medieval days, and there's a lot of history behind land trust, but they were first used hundreds of years ago. But we only need to focus on how they can benefit us now. And for simplicity, the land trust is nothing more than a method to take title to property, nothing more and nothing less. It's a revocable agreement between the officer of the trust, called the trustee, and the person who really controls the property, called the beneficiary. That's you. The trust identifies certain duties that each party agreed to perform, and the agreement is signed by both parties, and then it becomes the property of the beneficiary. Again, that's you. You're the beneficiary. You're the controlling interest. The beneficiary owns the trust, and the trust owns the property. The trustee has only those powers granted to him or her by the beneficiary, and he or she performs minimal duties, usually nothing but signing the document or signing the deed when you sell the property or the closing package. The trustee has no personal liability or responsibility to do anything more than those minimal tasks. The land trust has two main components, which are just frankly black ink on white paper. And the first part of the trust package is the deed to trust. The deed to trustee, I should say, which is the deed that actually transfers ownership from one entity into the land trust. This deed will replace a regular deed because it has trust language that sets up the trust as soon as the deed is recorded and gives the trustees limited powers. It is a special deed. You shouldn't be putting a property from you shouldn't be using a warranty deed or a quick claim deed or a grant deed without the trust language to deed a property into a land trust, because it does have to give the powers to the trustee to act on behalf of the trust, or in fact it could be that you don't really have a land trust. If you use the wrong deed, it's easy to assume that you do not have a land trust, because the deed is a document that forms the trust. The second document is the trust agreement, which spells out all of the conditions of the trust. This agreement stays with you and is the only document that discloses the beneficial interest. And that's going to be very important in our later discussions here. Both documents are easy to complete and really not a big deal at all. People ask me all the time, how do you form a land trust? Well, it's very simple. If you fill out the deed to trustee and record it, you've just funded the trust with the property, so your trust is formed. Let me say that again. You form a land trust by filling out a deed to trustee and recording it. Once you do that, the land trust is formed. and it exists until the term stated in the trust agreement, which usually is 30 years, expires, or until the deed to the, or until the property is deeded out of the land trust. Obviously, if you take the only asset in the land trust and deed that asset away, then the land trust is not funded anymore, therefore it no longer exists. And I don't want you to be afraid of the trustee, a deed to trustee. It's really no big deal. In fact, there's six or seven blanks on that thing. It'll take you longer to write a check than it will to fill out the deed to a trust. There's a blank for the grantee and the grantor, in other words, the seller and the buyer. And then there's a blank for the trustee. So let me go back now. The grantor is deeding it to the grantee. The grantor is the seller, or if you're putting your property into a land trust, that would be you. And you're deeding it to the grantee, which is the trustee, which we're going to get to here in just a second. Then there's a place for the legal description, and then the trust number. I usually use the house number as the trust number so that I can easily recognize by just looking at the house number what property is in the trust. Sometimes you can't look at the legal description and identify it with the property, but you can always look at the house number and quickly see what property is in that land trust. So you got the grantor, the grantee, the legal description, the trust number, the date, and then the signature of the seller or the grantor. And notice the seller or the grantor is the only one that signs the deed to the trust. Nowhere on a deed does the person or entity receiving ownership sign that deed. The deed is signed only by the seller or sellers, and of course it is witnessed and notarized. The deed must be notarized, and it must have at least one additional witness on it in most states before it can be recorded. So when you think about it, those are the blanks. So how hard can it be? Grantor, grantee, legal description, which you get right off the seller's documents, the date, the trust number, signature, witness, and notary. That's it. So anybody can fill out a deed to a trust. If you can get your hands on the legal description, it's a very easy instrument to fill out. Where do you get one? Well, you get a copy of a deed from numerous places. You can actually get them from various courses that are out on the market, including mine. My Cash Flow Systems has a copy of the warranty deed in it, along with the copy of the trust agreement. There are a few books out on the marketplace in some states on land trust. They're just not that difficult to get. Probably type in the words land trust and get them right on the internet, for that matter. Okay, why would you use a land trust? Savvy investors use land trust every single day, including me. When I take title to a property, I always take title into a land trust. This powerful document offers personal and legal advantages not associated with any other kind of a property or ownership. And first I'll list the benefits, and then we'll discuss each one of them briefly. Well, let me just discuss them briefly as I go. Privacy is the first one, and the biggest one. In fact, it's the biggest reason most people use a land trust, because remember, the beneficial interest of the land trust is not shown on the deed. Secrecy is an important aspect to a trust. Nobody knows you're the beneficiary except for you and the trustee. And so that means when somebody checks the title to the property, you don't own the property. Your name does not show up in an asset search. In fact, you have no interest in the property as far as the rest of the world knows. All they see is the property is owned by a trust. They don't know the beneficiary's name, and the only way they can find out is with a court order, of course, or unless you're a trustee or you have a big mouth. Nowhere is the beneficiary disclosed except in the land trust agreement. Now, the deed is recorded at the courthouse. It bears the name of the trustee as the grantee. Nowhere does it mention the beneficiary's name anywhere on that deed. The trust document itself remains in your possession, in your filing cabinet at home, and you're the only one that can fill that out, and you're the only one who knows the beneficial interests. And there, that's why you have privacy. The trust agreement isn't recorded anywhere. It never becomes a matter of public knowledge. Only the deed to the trust is recorded. Now, if a lender would ever request it, which is highly unlikely, they do have the right to call for a copy of the trust agreement. And so does your IRA if the property is being purchased in an IRA. In fact, if you set up your IRA with equity trust, as I suggested in earlier lessons, they will want a copy of the land trust agreement, assuming that the IRA is taking ownership of the property now, and it's not an option. Remember, they only want a copy of the land trust agreement if you're purchasing a property in your IRA, not if you're optioning it or lease optioning one in your IRA. And also, I've had cases many times, actually, where the closing agent for my buyer, I'm selling the property, I've owned it in a land trust for a while, now I'm selling it. It's not uncommon at all for the attorney or the title company that is issuing title insurance to your buyer to request a copy of that land trust agreement just so they can see who the beneficial interest is in it, probably so they can verify that the beneficiary actually gave the trustee the right to sign the property away. And if I were a title company, frankly, I'd be wanting a copy of it as well, just to put in my records. So your bank may ask for it, which is unlikely. Your IRA will ask for it, and sometimes the closing agent for your buyer will ask for it. In either case, if necessary, you can whip it up anytime you want. Remember, the deed is the only thing that is recorded, so the actual implementation of the land trust agreement itself is upon demand. However, it's probably advisable you do it before you die, because if you don't do it before you die, there's really no legal document that discloses who the beneficial interest is. Now, of course, if your spouse is savvy, I'm sure that they could whip one up too, but it would not be recommended that you do that. You should actually create one and stick it in the filing cabinet just for safety's sake. But again, nobody gets to see it until you furnish it. All right, another big benefit is loan liability in some cases. Well, let's talk about that and make sure you understand this. The trust can and should be used to create seller carryback financing. And there's absolutely no reason for you to ever personally guarantee a note to a seller or to an individual. If you don't heed this advice, you very well may be headed for an expensive real-world seminar. When you're given a note back to a seller, the process is really simple. The trust takes title to the house, so the trustee signs the note as trustee. Your name appears nowhere on that document. Therefore, you're not personally liable as long as the words as trustee appear after the trustee's signature. He, she, or it is not liable as well. Presto, you've just created a note that won't ever come back to haunt you. The most the seller can get is the property back, because you didn't guarantee the debt. The trust did. And the only asset in the trust is the one house you bought from the seller. So, in effect, the house guarantees the debt. Now, caution, notice I said when we're using seller financing, this is not going to work if you're going to go down to a lending institution and refinance your property. They're going to want you to personally guarantee that debt, and it's very unlikely they are going to close the loan while the property's in a land trust. So if you intend to refinance the property, you might as well assume you're going to put it in your own name, close the loan, and then you can always put it in the land trust the following day if you choose. So I don't want to leave you with the impression that taking title to property in land trust is going to get you out of personally guaranteeing debt at a bank. That is absolutely not the case. Limited lawsuit protection is another advantage. It's not a foolproof plan to keep you from getting sued, because your beneficial interest can be attached. However, it's a lot better than owning property in your own name. The first thing an attorney will do in preparation for suing you is to check your assets, and all he can do is check your name. If your name doesn't show up, and it won't, if your property's in a land trust, he doesn't have a clue you have anything to do with the property. So the only way you can find out is to get wind you own the property in a trust, and then calls you in for a deposition and ask you point blank, do you have any interest in any trust? At that time, you either have to answer yes, if you still do, or no, if you don't, or commit perjury. Let's assume, however, that you leave your property's title in your own name, or even worse, jointly with your spouse. Now you and your spouse get sued, and the plaintiff is awarded a large judgment over and above your insurance benefits. And just for the record, it didn't take much of a judgment to grossly exceed your insurance benefits. Please don't believe that insurance is your protect-all. It is absolutely not. And a lot of things can happen to you that insurance will have nothing to do with. For example, if you get liens and judgments against you, obviously no insurance is going to protect you against that. But even if somebody sues you and get a judgment, if the property's in a land trust, the judgment won't attach. However, the minute the judgment is recorded, it attaches to your properties if they're in your own name, and prevents any future sale or refinancing until that judgment is satisfied. if ever. In fact, the plaintiff can now start an action to take away the assets you worked so hard to get all your life. And on the other hand, let's just say you put your property, that your properties were in a land trust before the action started. First of all, a name search will produce nothing because you own nothing, as far as the public is concerned anyway, because your name is not on public record. And this alone will stop a lot of lawsuits in their tracks. And if it's obvious, if it is obvious that a judgment can't be collected, if won, it will be fruitless to pursue a lawsuit and incur the cost unless, of course, insurance proceeds were available. And under those circumstances, the case usually would be settled out of court anyway before they got judgment against you. But let's assume none of that happens. You get sued anyway, and they get a judgment. It doesn't attach to the properties because you don't own them. The trust owns the house, and you own the trust. And that would include an IRS or estate lien on you, and we'll discuss that in a minute. So let me say it again. You have a property in your name. If any kind of lien or a judgment attaches to you, it automatically attaches to your property if it's in your name. Get the property out of your name, put it in a land trust. A judgment or a lien against you does not attach to the property immediately because the property is not in your own name. Remember, you own the land trust. That's personal property. The land trust owns the real estate. That's real property. A judgment against you does not attach to a property you don't own. But before you get too smug, be aware that this does not prevent a good attorney from coming after your interest in the trust. But first, you must discover you have an interest, and second, someone must be willing to pay the high cost of another separate, expensive, and risky legal action. While it's not a foolproof lawsuit protector, it sure beats owning the property in your own name, where you become a sitting duck. And just imagine an attorney doing a title, an asset search on you, and you got a whole bunch of properties downtown registered in your own name. Boy, that's like painting a great big circle on your chest like a target and waiting for the incoming arrow to strike you in the heart. The more assets you own downtown in your own name, the bigger target you become, and the easier it is for creditors and predators to get at you. Because you see, once they get a judgment against you, it's an easy collection process from then on. They tie up your assets. You can't sell them. You can't refinance them. You're stuck with them. And that becomes a matter of public record and becomes a lien on the properties, and you're done. So putting these properties in a land trust becomes very important to you as the first step of asset protection, just so nothing like that happens to you, just to keep away liens and judgments from attaching to you. And I know you may be thinking to yourself, why are you worried so much about liens and judgments, Ron? I live a clean life. I do everything I'm supposed to do. I keep my promises. I don't get in trouble. No one has a reason to sue me, and on and on and on. But I cannot tell you how many times students have come to me with stories that bring tears to my eyes because they worked all of their life, worked their tail off, acquired of assets, get properties with a lot of equity in them, build a big income stream coming in from real estate. And then all of a sudden, some sharp attorney gets a hold of them for something they may or may not have been responsible for, and they wind up losing all of their assets or at least getting in a great big mess simply because they didn't take a little bit of time to structure them correctly to keep away the creditors and the predators. I've heard some very, very sad stories, and I really don't want to hear any more. And even if you don't understand this land trust stuff, you don't get it, and you can't get good advice on it, why don't you just go ahead and get a warranty deed to trustee, fill it out, record it, put each one of your properties in a land trust, and then figure it out later. At least I'll sleep better, and I know you'll sleep better, knowing that a lien against you is not going to automatically attach to that property. Again, it's not an absolute foolproof lawsuit protection device, but it sure beats nothing. If you've got your properties in your own name, that's the wrong way to own real estate. In fact, in time, if we get together, I'm going to teach you that you should not own anything in your own name, and that goes way beyond real estate. If anything that is titled in your name that anybody can get can find out just puts you in a position of liability and a potential asset loss. Another benefit of land trust is estate planning. A land trust is a good first step to estate planning, but it's by no means a total plan. Many kinds of trusts and other entities are available, but that's a subject that that we'll deal with at a later time, because it is way too complicated to get into on this lesson. In fact, if you are interested in thoroughly protecting yourself, and I mean literally building a moat around your castle so creditors and predators cannot penetrate you no matter what you do wrong, you probably owe it to yourself to get into our entity structuring class, where we spend 3 days. Actually, we don't spend it. We have a national law firm that spends 3 days working with you on the art of entity structuring, asset protection, estate planning, and tax reduction. All four of those things are actually a part of that 3-day event, where we literally go through all of the entities, each one of them separately, without getting you so confused you don't understand what you're doing. And then the beautiful part about that training is that after it's over and you have a clear understanding of what you want to do, the attorneys, if you wish, will go home and create the entities that you and they think are best for your personal needs, and then it'll be done. I hired this national law firm to teach this event simply because too many students were coming and getting trained on asset protection, and of course going home and waiting until they get around to it. But I'm so tired of hearing the stories about people losing their assets while they're waiting to get around to it. The only thing that stands between you and losing everything you own is just a little old stack of papers about a half an inch deep. Get that paperwork done now, and you can go to bed every night and wake up and forget about anybody coming after your marbles, because you're protected. The wealthy people understand asset protection. The super wealthy are very, very good at it. I know you've heard stories about people. In fact, if you just think about it, remember the case of O.J. Simpson. They took everything he had but his IRA. That was the only thing he had that was safe from the predator. So, O.J. could have used a lesson in asset protection. If you want to know more about entity structuring, go to ronlegrand.com and look it up there, or call the office at 800-567-6128 and ask the counselors there to get you some information on it. If your property is in a trust and you die, whoever is your beneficiary now owns this trust. So coming back to estate planning here, whatever interest you own, he or she now owns. However, to avoid probate, in most cases, you're going to need to go way beyond the land trust. And the most widely used method is to place the land trust in either a family limited partnership or an LLC. And we'll do a little crash course on that here for just a second. The reason that the smart advisors will teach you to have your land trust owned by a limited partnership or an LLC is because if a predator would actually to come after you and get a charging order or a judgment against you, and actually got a charging order against your assets in the family limited partnership, there's a federal law that says they cannot take the assets of a family limited partnership or an LLC. Now, they can attach the income, but they can't attach the assets. So if you happen to be the controlling interest in an LLC or a family limited partnership, and some predator were to come after your income and attach it, you simply cut the income off. And the beautiful part about that is either in an LLC or a family limited partnership, if you cut the income off and don't distribute it, unfortunately, the members or the limited partners still have to pay taxes on the income, whether they got it or not. Therefore, if a creditor were to attach the income of either of these entities, they would wind up getting a tax bill for income that they didn't receive. So that in itself will deter people from suing these two entities, because they know they can't get the assets, but now they can't even get the income the minute they find out that you're in control of that. So it will literally deter anybody from suing those two entities. That's why they are considered the safest asset protection entities in the country today. The land trust is a transparent entity as far as the IRS is concerned now, which means that they will tax you just as you're being taxed now. There is absolutely no tax consequences whatsoever, good or bad, because you put a property into a land trust. As long as the ownership of that land trust did not go from one entity to another. For example, if you were to buy a property from a seller into your land trust, that is a taxable entity from the seller. Not you yet, because you haven't sold. If you were to put your own property into a land trust, that is not a taxable entity because the property's not been sold. So as long as you don't literally change the entity that owns, you are literally changing the entity, but as long as you don't sell the property, then you have no tax consequences of a land trust. Now, when you deed your property into a land trust, that's not taxable. But when now your land trust, when your trustee deeds the property to your buyer, that is a taxable event to you. So, but I've read the code myself, and the IRS considers this a see-through entity, as is commonly referred to. So do not worry about taxes. However you're being taxed now on the property is how you'll be taxed after it's in a land trust. You don't need to even tell your accountant. In fact, I suggest you do not tell your CPA or accountant that you transferred any of your properties into a land trust. Unfortunately, most accountants don't have a clue what a land trust is, and sometimes they want to go file for a tax ID number or do something weird that is not required simply because they don't have any idea. They just don't know, and they do strange things sometimes. So considering that the land trust has absolutely no tax consequences, there is no reason to discuss it with your CPA. And if I were you, the IRS is one gorilla I wouldn't dance with. The good news is about paying the tax. When you pay taxes, that there's plenty left over for you. And if you're worried about paying too much taxes, a rich old man once told me one time, you're not making enough money. Okay, ease of transfer. Now, this is a benefit only when you're dealing from investor to investor, because it's very difficult to get owner-occupant schooled on the land trust, nor would I even suggest you try. In fact, the more you talk about a land trust, the bigger mess you're going to make, and the more you're going to scare any owner-occupant you're trying to sell the property to. But when you sell to a buyer who understands trust, and that would only be other investors, quite often he or she would prefer you to assign him or her the trust rather than the trust deeding the property to them. This action saves closing costs because there's really nothing changed down the courthouse. Remember, the property was deeded into the land trust, but now we're selling the land trust instead of the house. The trust still owns the house, and you're simply selling the trust. It's done with one sheet of paper called an assignment of beneficial interest, or in some cases, some use a quick claim deed where the trustee transfers its interest to another trustee, but the land trust remains valid. It's as simple as you signing it, your trustee signing it, and you handing it to the buyer. That's it. Now, of course, your buyer will want to check the title first, I'm sure, and you'll probably want someone to prepare a HUD-1 closing statement to put in your file and one for the buyer's file, but the normal transfer and recording cost could be avoided by doing this. Now, I will not tell you that your state's going to prefer that. In fact, in reality, you probably do owe transfer tax with that transfer because you are legitimately transferring from one entity to the other. On the other hand, I have to also tell you that most people who transfer trust to trust wind up not paying transfer taxes, even though they should. They just use it as a device to not have to change anything at the courthouse. Thus, no one knows the transfer took place. I don't want to get in the middle of that discussion. I will leave that up to between you and your legal counsel how you want to handle that. My job is to advise you what to do, what can be done, and then it's your job to decide what's best for you. All right, let's talk about bank loans and land trusts. I think we already have, but let me go over it again. When you go to a bank to borrow money that is secured by property, the bank will require your personal signature on the note. And it will not let you take title in the trust because they just don't understand it. If you have intentions of buying the property and refinancing it, take title in your name. I hate to tell you that. I hate those words hurt coming out of my mouth. But that's your only choice. And then, of course, the day after the loan closes, you can transfer it back. Now, you don't need to worry about the lender calling the loan due because they cannot. There's a law. It's called the Garn-St. Germain Federal Depository Institution Act of 1982. It's a federal law, and that act made it illegal for a lender to call a loan simply because property has been transferred into a land trust. When you get a chance, you might want to pull up that law because there's other things in there that might interest you. Really, where that law came about was that it's actually the one that gave the teeth to the due on sale clause to the lender, but then they had a bunch of exclusions added to the law, and the land trust exclusion was one of them. For example, that same law gives you the right to transfer properties from family member to family member without the bank calling it due. So it might pay you to go pull up that law. That's the Garn St. Germain Federal Depository Institution Act of 1982. Okay, the next session is about appointing a trustee. Now, the trustee must be a person you trust, or in some states it can be your corporation or LLC or any entity, in fact. I live in Florida. I use a corporation as a trustee. Just north of me is Georgia. In Georgia, they have to use an individual as a trustee. The state has a law that trustees have to be individuals. I can't sit here and go through state by state with you. You're just going to have to ask your attorney or a title company if it's okay for you to use a entity in your state for a trustee or if it has to be an individual. In my opinion, if you can use an entity, you're far better off using an entity than in some other individual. That way, you only have you, and you involved because you will be signing for that entity. I like the fact that my corporation can be my trustee. Then I sign as president of that corporation, and I don't have to have any other trustee present. In Texas, for example, you also need an individual as a family member. The rest of them, I just don't remember them all. So you have to do your own homework. Now, you could make a family member or a friend or a title agent your trustee. The trustee can be someone out of state. Really don't make any difference where the trustee lives. Now, they must be of age. Trustee cannot be a minor. But remember, the trustee does the signing for any transactions of the trust. So the trustee can close deals for you when you're not in town because of the trust provisions. But the trustee can also sign documents only because you as the beneficiary give him her permission. The beneficiary has all the control. That's you. The trustee does not have the permission to do anything unless you grant them that permission. They have no control except what you tell them to do. But they do sign all of the documents at closing. In other words, the trustee will be the one signing the deed as trustee, not you. Who should be your trustee? Gosh. I get that question all the time, and my answer is, if it's not going to be one of your own entities, it certainly should be someone you trust. Remember, your trustee signs the deed. How would you like to take a trip to Hawaii, spend 2 weeks over there having a blast, and come back and found out your trustee has signed the deed while you were gone without your permission? Certainly it's illegal, but you try telling the trustee that if you can find him or her after they've absconded with all the money. So you certainly want to make sure that you trust your trustee. You could literally use your spouse's maiden name. I don't want the spouse to be the trustee and have her name or his name on public record with your last name. So sometimes we suggest that husbands use their spouse's maiden name as trustee, and as long as you can prove that your maiden name matches you when it comes time to sell, then you won't have a problem with that, or shouldn't have. Some people use their relatives, as long as the relative has a different last name. It doesn't really make any difference who that trustee is, but again, it's got to be somebody you trust. And what do you pay them? I pay them nothing. Obviously, they don't do anything except sign when I tell them to sign. But hey, use your own judgment. It's not a big deal. Just find somebody you trust and just tell them when it's time to sign the property away. Actually, think about it, the trustee doesn't even sign anything when the property is being purchased, normally. Now, sometimes if you go to a formal closing, the trustee might need to sign the closing statement, but normally the trustee is going to be used when they're signing the deed and the closing statement to sell the property. I know this has been a brief introduction to a few of the key ideas regarding the use of trust. To really use trust effectively, you need to learn a lot more, but it's just too extensive of a subject for this one class. Frankly, I think I've given you enough basics to where you can get out there and start using a trust, as long as you don't let people who don't have any idea what they're talking about try to scare you away from it. Because you really don't have anything to lose. You have everything to gain and nothing to lose. I've got thousands of students using land trust all over the country. That's because they're simple to use. They don't cost you one dime extra to use them or not use them, and they provide all the benefits that we've just discussed. And bearing in mind bearing that in mind, please don't let a so-called expert convince you otherwise. Get the facts from the people who know instead of constantly reinventing the wheel, trying to take advice from people who really don't have a clue. Some attorneys think they're business trusts. They get them confused with other types of trust. Some attorneys will advise you not to use them because there's no statute in your state concerning land trust. That has nothing to do with whether they're usable or not. In fact, I will tell you right now that land trusts are usable in all 50 states of the United States. Now, if you're Canadian and listen to this, you do not use land trusts in Canada. Most people up there use LLCs or corporations instead of the land trust. If you buy real estate, you should be using land trust. It's just that simple, and that is my opinion. And I have an ignorance warning for you here right now. You're going to meet resistance from people about the land trust, especially attorneys, as we just discussed. But here's the problem. They don't get it, and they're confused about it. And if you take their advice, it very well may lead you to a problem that you could have easily averted if you just didn't listen to that advice. Just for the record, a land trust needs none of these following things. It does not need a federal ID number. It does not need a tax return. It has no annual dues whatsoever. There's no special reporting that has to be done for it like other entities. And it does not require a bank account. In fact, you don't want a bank account for a land trust. There's just no reason not to use them. In other words, it's no more work to have a land trust than not have a land trust. It doesn't take any more time to put it in a land trust as it does in your own name. There is no downside to a land trust. There's only upsides. So my advice to you is strongly is to go ahead and put it in a land trust. And hey, worst case, if somebody convinces you you've done something wrong, you can take it right back out of the land trust just as fast as you put it in there. So start using them, and then maybe sometime in the future when you get more chance to get a little bit more training on them, you'll understand why, and you can thank me then. So let me go over just a handful of questions that I haven't covered right now, and hopefully this will answer all of them that you can think of. What if I'm already being sued? Sometimes people ask me, well, gosh, it's too late. I'm already being sued. Well, it's not too late. Even if you're being pursued by predators and you think that they're going to get a judgment against you, you can still go put your property into a land trust and do it immediately. If you have a court hearing on Tuesday at 3 o'clock and you think the judge is going to drop the hammer and issue a judgment on you and it gets recorded immediately, if you put your property into a land trust at 1 o'clock, that judgment, assuming you get that deed recorded now, that judgment is not going to attach to that property. Now, don't misread what I just said. If a good sharp attorney were to get wind that you put the property in there, that could be considered a fraudulent conveyance, and they may make you take it back out and on and on and on and on. But let me ask you, what have you got to lose? It costs you almost nothing, probably $20 to put your house on a land trust. And if the judgment doesn't attach, at least you've got all that time. And here's something that you'll only learn from the School of Hard Knocks with a few years behind you, and that is that it's very seldom that the attorney's ever even going to find out, and there's a real good chance that by having the property in a land trust before a judgment came down against you, it'll never get overturned, and that'll be the end of it. It's absolute certainty if you don't put it in a land trust that judgment will attach to that property as soon as it gets recorded. So, hey, again, what do you got to lose? People ask me, should I put my home in a land trust? Well, why not? I would think the most sacred asset you have would be your home. I think that's the one you'd want to get protected the most. Well, I live in a state with a homestead. Well, that has nothing to do with it. It may be true that, like in Florida, for example, if you get a judgment against me personally and it does attach to my home, you can't take my home away from me for a judgment. On the other hand, that still doesn't preclude the judgment from attaching to my home. Sure, you can't force the sale of it, but when I get ready to sell my home, now I become the stuckee, and there I am with this big judgment against it, and I can't sell it without coming to deal with you. So absolutely put your home into a land trust. Immediately, like tomorrow, like today, go fill out the warranty deed to trustee and go down and record it. Again, what's the worst going to happen? Nothing. Worst case, you have to take it back out because somebody tells you you should and you believe them. There's no downside to putting your house in a land trust. You don't lose income tax benefits. You don't lose any tax benefits whatsoever. By the way, if you live in a state that has homestead exemption like Florida or Texas or a couple others, just simply put it right on the deed that the beneficial interest of this trust resides in the property as their principal residence. And that should protect you even from losing any homestead exemption or tax reductions that you have. So get your house in a land trust and get it in there immediately. All right, next question. Can you fire your trustee? Absolutely. Anytime you want. The warranty deed to trustee and the trust agreement give you powers to fire your trustee. You don't need their permission. You can just say, you're fired. And there's a little document called resignation of trustee or appointment of successor trustee. And or you can just write them a letter and tell them you're fired and appoint another one. Whether you put that on public record or not is really kind of irrelevant. As long as you have some kind of a document, when you get ready to sell the house, you produce a document that you fired that trustee and put another one in place, and your closing agent should accept that with no problem. So, again, the trustee will not hold you hostage. They have no powers except that which is granted to them by the beneficial interest. Another reason, of course, like why I like to have my entity, the trustee, when I can get it, when it's applicable, because it's hard for me to fire myself. Myself doesn't listen too well. Well, what if a trustee gets in trouble? How does that affect me or the beneficiary? Well, it doesn't. A trustee is not liable for anything that happens to the trust. The beneficiary is not liable for the actions of the trustee. Trustee is not liable for the actions of the beneficiary unless there's some kind of fraud involved somewhere along the line. So just, for example, if you have a trustee and that trustee gets sued and a judgment comes against that trustee, it will not attach to your property. And if it did, you would get it removed very quickly because they have no right to put a judgment against a property that the trustee doesn't own. The trustee doesn't own. Remember, you, the beneficiary, own the property. The trustee is just acting as your pawn. Next question, well, what do I record? The answer, you record only the warranty deed to the trustee. You absolutely do not record the trust agreement itself. Now, in the state of Arizona, I understand that they do make you record the trust agreement there. And in that case, the beneficial interest will be a matter of public record. So if I were you, I would simply make sure the beneficial interest of the land trust is not you personally, but it's another entity. So think about what I just said. If you make the beneficial interest an entity, then no one still knows who owns the property because they don't know who that entity is. That's the best thing I can tell you to do is to make sure that your name does not go on that public record even as the beneficiary, even if they request that you record that trust agreement. And if I were you, before I go recording a trust agreement, I would get a good sharp real estate attorney who understands these land trusts and see if there's some other document that we could record that does not disclose the beneficial interest in Arizona. All right. I hope we've already answered this one, but how does a land trust affect your taxes? The answer is it does not. There's absolutely no income tax consequences whatsoever, whether you use a land trust or not. It in no way affects your income taxes. Next question, do I need an attorney to form a land trust? Well, God bless you if you try to find one. But there's nothing an attorney can do for you that you can't do for yourself. You get a warranty deed to trustee, and you fill out the 6 or 7 blanks on it, as we discussed earlier in this conversation, and you go down to your recorder's office, and you say, I would like to record this. If there's something on that deed that you don't have on there, they'll tell you before they take it. Make a note, you will need a prepared by and a return to and an address. In other words, they have to know who to mail to the recorded deed to. So up in the upper left-hand or right-hand corner of the deed, just put prepared by and returned to your address, your name and your address. That doesn't have anything to do with ownership, so don't worry about it. Or you can have it returned to one of your entities, one of your post office boxes or whatever. But don't worry about filling out the warranty deed to trustee. Once you've done it once, you will discover it is really a 2-minute process, and I promise you it literally does take longer to write a check than it does to fill out a warranty deed to trustee. Don't forget now, you have to have it notarized and one witness. In this case, if you're putting your own properties into a land trust, the notary is notarizing your signature because you're the only signature on there. All right, here's another question I get. How many houses should I put in a land trust? And the answer is one. You should never put more than one house in one trust. Again, one house in one trust. That way you don't have all your eggs in one basket, And if something ever did happen on one property, then it would be separated from the others. For example, suppose you had, five pieces of property, five single family houses, and you had each of them, all of them in one land trust, or worse yet, in your own name. And you had a fire in one of those houses that three children got killed in because a smoke alarm didn't go off. You are absolutely going to get sued, and if they can prove just cause, they will get a judgment against you. If they get a judgment against you, and those five houses are in your name, then that judgment will attach to all five houses. If you put five properties in one land trust, same thing. That judgment will attach to all five of those properties. But if you put five properties in five different land trusts, your judgment will attach only to the property that belonged to the land trust that had the problem, and that's the one that they had to fire. So in other words, by removing that land trust out of the basket with all the other properties, then the rest of the eggs in the basket aren't at jeopardy. It's only a smart thing to do. It's really not any more complicated than that. And I will grant you, I had to hear this land trust stuff about seven times before I did anything about it. But looking back, I just can't imagine what took me so long. I don't know what I was trying to understand or why it was so difficult to get it through my thick head. But it's just nothing to this. And I don't want you to make a big deal out of it. And I just hate to see people sit around waiting to put properties in a land trust, trying to get answers from people who are not going to give it to them. It's a very simple process. Fill out the warranty deed to trustee, record the warranty deed to trustee, and voila, your property's in a land trust. If you make a mess of the warranty deed to trustee and someone tells you later that it's wrong, very simply, go do it again right and put corrected deed at the top and record it, and voila, everything's fixed. So you can't make a mess you can't fix. You're probably not going to make a mess at all. The biggest mess you could make is not doing anything and leaving those properties exposed out there in your own name. That I just don't want to see you do. So use the land trust, use it immediately, and then maybe if I see you in a class sometime in the near future, we can have a bigger discussion on it, and maybe you can write down your questions, and we'll discuss them at that time. But when we do that, I would like to ask you, do you have your properties in land trust? And I'd like to get a yes answer, and then we'll answer your questions, and then you'll be glad to know that you've got it done. So with that said, I hope this gives you some insight into the world of land trust. Again, I strongly urge you to consider using them immediately for any kind of property. That includes single family, multifamily, commercial property, raw land, whatever. I don't care how big the property is or how small the property is. If I owned a 90-story building in downtown New York, I'd own it in a land trust. Again, what entities own the land trust and how deeply I want to get into asset protection is a subject for another conversation, but it would all start with ownership being in the land trust first, so that no one in the world knows that I'm a principal in that land trust. Total privacy, and it's a great thing when the world doesn't know what you own and you're not exposed out there to creditors and predators.